Hello, today I'll be reading from Mark chapter 2, verses 1 to 13. Woe to those who plan iniquity, to those who plot evil on their beds. At morning's light they carry it out, because it is in their power to do it. They covet fields and seize them, and houses and take them. They defraud a man of his home, a fellow man of his inheritance. Therefore the Lord says, I am planning disaster against this people, from which you cannot save yourself. You will no longer walk proudly, for it will be a time of calamity. In that day, men will ridicule you. They will taunt you with this mournful song. We are utterly ruined. My people's possession is divided up. He takes it from me. He assigns our fields to traitors. Therefore, you will have no one in this assembly of the Lord to divide the land by lot. Do not prophesy. The prophets say, do not prophesy about these things. Disgrace will not overtake us, should it be said. O house of Jacob, is the Spirit of the Lord angry? Does he do such things? Do not my words do good to him whose ways are upright? Lately my people have been risen up like an enemy. You strip off the rich robe from those who pass without a care, like men returning from battle. You drive from the women of my people, from their pleasant homes. You take away my blessing from my children forever. Get up, go away, for this is not your resting place, because it is defiled. It is ruined beyond all remedy. If a liar and a deceiver comes and says, I will prophesy for you plenty of wine and beer, he would be just a prophet for this people. I will surely gather all of you, O Jacob, surely bring together the remnant of Israel. I will bring them together like sheep in a pen, like a flock in its pasture. The place will throng with people. One who breaks open the way will go up before them.
That is the last of our minor prophets. I've got an impression some of you found this series really helpful. So there's Micah, and he was speaking to Judah in the southern kingdom about 700 BC. He was a contemporary of Amos, who spoke the week before Anne-Marie came, on justice. Have you ever had that thing where you are in your car with your sat-nav and there's a lag between the sat-nav receiving a signal and the real place you are on the road, and you're coming up to a motorway junction, and it doesn't tell you quite in time that's the junction you need. So you go past, and then it tells you that's the junction you need. It's too late. You are now on the wrong road, and depending on which motorway it is, it's a long distance to the next junction. You're going out of your way. And Micah is saying to the people of Israel, you are on the wrong road. You are going a long way out of your way. Woe to those who plan iniquity, to those who plot evil on their beds. At morning's light they carry it out, because it's in their power to do it. They covet fields and seize them, and houses and take them. They defraud people of their homes and rob them of their inheritance. Jesus talks about two paths. He says, wide is a gate and broad is a road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. And he says, small is a gate and narrow is the path that leads to life, and only few find it. Two paths, two roads. Micah is saying you are on the wrong road. But we look at some of his descriptions of people and we think, goodness, aren't they terrible? They covet fields and seize them. They defraud people of their homes. I would never do that type of thing. That's what big businesses do, wicked corporations. That's what the mafia do. That's what wicked accountants do. I'm not like that. Most of you probably think you're good people, even Christians, but I would think, yeah, I'm good people. I know God saved me, and I know I'm a bit of a sinner, but I'm not bad on the whole. And we think that kind of, you know, we wouldn't do those type of terrible things. Probably you wouldn't plot to take someone's house and destroy it or nick it. But last week, Anne-Marie came, wasn't she a good speaker? And she was saying how one of the problems we have is we've lost our vision. I wear glasses, as you can see. I didn't wear them till I was secondary school. And the first time I put them on, sort of this whole new world appeared. When I used to play football for my football team, which lost a lot, I couldn't see the end of the pitch. I used to play in defence. And seriously, I used to wonder what went up at the front. And then I put my glasses on, I could see. I didn't realise how bad my vision was until I could see properly. And our norm is not good. Do you know 80% of people think they're better than average? If you're a mathematician, you know that doesn't hold water. And that's our problem. We think our norm is good, but it might not be. Every society thinks their norm is good. So there's a lot of reflection on the British Empire. I don't want to go into the whole debate. British Empire is like all empires. Probably it's a mixture of good and bad, but we're finding there's a lot of bad, perhaps, that we didn't quite realise. As people who we colonised are now in positions of power and able to articulate and speak and write, we're finding out all sorts of things. But at the time, every British person, pretty much, would have thought it was good in the 18th centuries, 19th centuries. We were kind of civilising the world, educating it, building hospitals, bringing order to what we thought was chaos. I'm not saying that's right, but that's what people would have thought. If you were a teacher or a doctor or a mechanic or a labourer, you would have just thought, I'm going to go to bed tonight and I'm going to think about that school and that class I'm going to run. And the next morning, I'm going to get up with energy and do it, just like the people who were described. It says, at night, they go to bed, and then they get up, evil to do what's wrong. And they'd have got up with energy, thinking, what a great work I'm doing. And now we look back and say, well, hang on a moment, it wasn't as good as you thought it was. So society's norm is not necessarily good. We can't see properly. You might think, okay, well, that's society, that's not me. You know, that's a big country. But let me give you just a very humble example. Let's have a look at Irish Pete Moss. Doesn't get much more normal than that. Now, when I tell stories and give examples, if I'm doing a talk, I'm usually trying to think of myself first so that you don't think, oh, Nathan's sitting there because I use Irish Moss Pete and he's thinking about me. I don't know who uses Irish Moss Pete. What I do know is I'm planning, I'm going to bed at night thinking of a new border that I'm planning in my garden. What could be more innocent than that? God, one is closer to God in the garden than anywhere else on earth. I don't know if that's true, but that's what we think. Nature, digging in the peat moss. The only problem is we've now discovered that peat moss is really terrible for the environment. It's so destructive, it's going to be banned by 2030. It's terrible for the environment. So what I thought was good is actually bad. We've been digging up the peat for years. There'll be all sorts of things that we do. Can you see what I mean? What we think, our vision is not good. We're not as good as we think we are. And there's so many examples. So as a manager, I've managed employees. I look back now and I think, that wasn't right the way I did that thing. I didn't have the whole picture. I think I was a bit unfair. Likewise, I've been an employee. And I think I treated my manager really badly. I should have got on and done that thing that they asked me to do at the time. I thought I was justified in doing it. Our vision isn't good. And he warns us, Micah warns us. He says, you're on the road to destruction. You're probably saying, hang on a moment, destruction for using a bit of moss peat? That's a bit much, isn't it? But that's an example of our whole society. All the time, we've pushed God out. And when we push God out, the person who steps into his place is actually you. And you now have to make the world meet your needs. And that is destructive. You might say, well, hang on a moment, I don't put me first. I put my children first, for example. That might be true. But is it true? Or is it you putting yourself first to make sure you're a good parent and seen as a good parent and know you're a good parent? Actually, that's what's first. Or it could genuinely be true, you really do put your children first, but actually that can be destructive as well. Because you'll do everything to put them first. Even if it means other people lose out in your life. Could be your partner, could be other kids. You push your kids to the front of the queue. I've seen that, both literally and metaphorically. So again, when we think we're doing what's good and right, actually it might not be quite so good. So what Micah is saying is, you're evil and you don't really realise it. And you're on the wrong road. That road has to be not a good road. So your response might be this morning, well, I'm going to try harder. I'm going to double down. I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to examine myself. I'm going to read the Bible. I'm going to pray and I'm going to get it right. But you'll never manage it. that's a road to disaster as well, because you're trying to undo all the bad stuff to do the good stuff. You are again in the driving seat. God's saying that's the whole problem. When you're in the driving seat, it doesn't work well. So if Jesus says, hang on a moment, I'll come, I'll show you how it's done. So he leaves all the glory of heaven and comes to earth. And he speaks the truth, and he cares for the sick, and he heals those who are ill, and he shares his money, and he feeds the hungry. He shows us how far you and I are off God's standard. It's a bit like he helps the world put on a pair of glasses and think, oh, now I can see what goes on in the goal at the other side of the pitch. I never knew what happened there before. I was doing some Bible prep with Matt and Sam, and I was saying how as you grow as a Christian, you kind of think, well, I'm going to feel better and better and better and better and more affirmed. Actually, the opposite happens. You see more and more just how bad you are, and you think, oh, that's going to be terrible, but it's not, because God actually begins to show you how bad you are in every way. And he begins to deal with those things and transform you and change. He doesn't condemn you anymore, he begins to change you. So I didn't come to condemn the world, but to save it. He comes to the cross, and he takes on the destruction that should have been yours and mine. So the road, every road leads to the cross. There it is. It goes to the cross. And if you like, you take Jesus on as your boss and you go on and through. And you say, well, hang on a moment. I don't want another boss. But the thing is, when you were boss, we were just saying things weren't going so well. It's a destructive when you're the boss. Everything has to be for yourself. It's a bit of a burden as well. Jesus comes as a boss, but instead of it being a burden, it's light. Why? Because this is how he lives his life. He puts everybody else first. First, he seeks God's will. My food and drink, he says, is to do the will of my Father. And then in doing God's will, because God is love, he puts everybody else first. He dies, greater love hath no man, and he gives up his life for his friends. He dies for you and he dies for me. He's now your boss. He's the power living inside you. That's really liberating. You don't have the burden of having to sort to make everything work for you. And the new life that you live starts, we always say, with those closest to you first, your family, your friends, your workplace. Wonderful Lillian giving that example of how God's love through her permeated her workplace. Thank you for that, Lillian. And you become an agent of God's justice. Not to try and get right with him, but because you're already right with him. But he begins to change you, gives you his glasses, and you see things, and you start to use your money. All of us should be thinking of how we use our money. Each of you, it says in the Bible, should look at what you receive and decide how much to give to God. It's all God. I'm not saying you don't have to give it to the church. It's not a grab for the money for the church, Oxfam or Tear Fund, but find somewhere good with some of your money. It can be a penny a week if that's all you can give. It can be a pound a month. But we should be beginning to look at our money, our time, the choices we make. We don't say social justice, that's for that lot over there, the keen Christians. We see, as we saw last week and the week before that, that's God's passionate about our broken world. He hates, passionately hates what's evil, and he passionately loves what's good. So God takes us off this destructive road and into life. There's a little tree of life. Now, before we end, just three things that we need to talk about. One is false prophets. Two is the help of the king. And three is family. Can you stay with me for just those three things? It's just one more page. Is that all right? Is that good? Okay, well done. Okay, false prophets. In that bit that Sam read, it says, do not prophesy. Their prophets say about these things, disgrace will not overtake us. Does the Lord become impatient? Does he do such things? What's all that about? In those days, people knew that God spoke through the prophets. Now he speaks through Jesus Christ in the scriptures. And false prophets in our society will be saying, don't listen to that. Don't listen to what I've just said. Nothing's wrong. God's nice, it says in that passage, the false prophet is saying, does the Lord become impatient? He's a nice guy. You're not really heading for trouble. Carry on as you are. You're okay. Everybody's like that. We live in the 21st century. You're talking about a man dying on the cross. It's a bit medieval, isn't it? A bit much, being destroyed for a bit of moss peat, misuse. Is it really? Remember 2 weeks ago we said, those who aren't worried about justice are always the ones at the top of the pile. The ones at the bottom of the pile, they're worried about justice. The ones who are being exploited and robbed and having things stolen and whose land's being polluted, and they're always worried about justice. So if we're not worried about justice and how bad things are, that could say more about where we sit than whether there's a real problem with us and with the world. The other thing is, it's really strange. We cry out for judgment everywhere, don't we? We want Russia to be punished for invading Ukraine, which, without cause. We think of all those people in the court cases we may have seen on the TV this week and think they need to go to jail for a long time. Throw away the key. That's what we say. But when it's us, we're not so keen about judgment. Let me give you just a small example to show you what I mean. Your insurance company overcharges you. You're on the phone straight away. I don't do that many miles in my car. You've overcharged me. £100 for my insurance. We're really sorry, sir. We pay it back. Thank you. You have a bang with your car. You're meant to tell people if you have a bang with your car. You're meant to tell the insurance company because it might increase the premium. I think, well, I won't tell them about that. We reversed into something. So that's what this one's about. So I reversed into something. And the insurance company never needs it. I don't tell them. Where's the justice there? We're great talking about, we don't want judgment unless it affects, because it affects us. So our vision's not good. And then there's Christian false prophets. You get secular false prophets and Christian false prophets. And the Christian false prophets in the church, this is what they say. They say, don't be too hard on yourself. Don't be too hard on yourself. You can be wealthy and follow Jesus. You can have it all, guys. It's all about proportion. That's what they say. But you only have to look at the life of Jesus to say that's not right. Jesus gives up everything. And you and I have to give up everything. To get off of this road, we give up everything. We go to Jesus Christ and we say, you're the boss. You're in charge. We're following you. That's why Jesus says the road is narrow. And few travel on it. You give up everything. That makes you incredibly vulnerable. When I was preaching this, I think, wow, this is really hard. Micah is calling me to give up everything to follow Jesus Christ. I've got to tell everybody here to give up everything to follow Jesus Christ. You are completely vulnerable. Jesus says, I'm sending you like sheep amongst wolves. Let me give you a little story. In India, which is meant to have freedom of religion, this came from CSW, this is their prayer email this week, so some of you may have read it. A lady called Vijay and her husband Ashok were violently attacked on the 10th of January. She was a community healthcare worker, so she would go around and knock on people's doors and talk about healthcare, so employed by the government. But some villagers objected to the fact that a Christian woman was entering their home. She was falsely accused of forced conversion, which is illegal in India. You've got freedom of religion, but forced conversion's illegal. They said, you were forcibly converted to Christianity. The police called a meeting to try and calm things down. But when Vijay went to speak to give her side of the case, there was a mob action and the crowd attacked the couple. Other Christian families from the same church also were harassed earlier in the month, and the local utility chief shut off the electricity and water supply for three families in a church, leaving without basic services. And the families were publicly warned that they would be killed if they continued to follow Jesus. That's in India, which is meant to have freedom of worship. They've given up everything to follow Jesus Christ. Peter says the same thing. We left everything to follow you. Truly, I tell you, Jesus replied, no one who left home or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or fields for me and the gospel will fail to receive 100 times as much in this present age. Homes, brothers, sisters, that's who you are to me. That's who you are to one another. Children and fields, along with persecutions, and in the age to come, eternal life. But many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first. So I'm reading this thing, hang on a moment, I've got to give up my ideas of a comfy retirement, got my money in the bank, nice and safe. That's vulnerable. Jesus could call on that anytime. I might be needed to do that. My reputation could be on the line. I've got to do work harder than I think. Some of my leisure time will be on the line. I'm giving up to Jesus. I don't like this. And so Jesus says to the disciples, do you want to leave me? Because lots of people leave him when they find out how hard it is to follow Jesus. Peter says, you have the words of eternal life. Where else would we go? And so false prophets follow the king. The one who breaks open the way will go before them. They will break through the gate and go out. Their king will pass through before them, the Lord at their head. Jesus says, you can trust me. Don't worry, you are vulnerable, you have got to give everything up. Don't listen to the false prophets, don't listen to the Christian false prophets, don't listen to the secular false prophets. I gave up everything because I loved God and I loved everybody else. That's the way to eternal life. You receive more than you ever dared believe, both in this age and the age to come. Get off this road. This has to go to destruction. People are saying it's medieval to believe in me. Hang on a moment. This road's got to end in death. It has to. No one's found a way of living forever in the 21st century. This has to be selfish. It has to be everyone for themselves because there isn't. You don't believe there's anyone else to help you on this road. So you've got to look after yourself as number one. Here, but I'm here for you. I love you. Come and follow me. Look at my life. Look at the meaning it gave. Look at the way it transformed people. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Come and follow me to the Father. And family, we need one another. That's why one of our aims as a church over this next 2 years is deep friendship. Not just, oh, I see Esther and Victor and JJ on a Sunday morning. It's, hi, how are you doing? I never think of them again. No, we're working out how can we be deeply friends because we need one another. I will bring them together like sheep in a pen. I hope it doesn't feel too much like a pen here. Do you know what I mean? You've got a nice comfy sheep, like sheep in a pen, like a flock in its pasture. The place will throng with people. That's a nice feeling, isn't it? Throng. Do you know what I mean? We're here for one another. That's why friendship is so important. May God make your love increase and overflow for each other and everyone else. Paul says, I love that verse. What a great verse. And remember the crane, not by might, nor by power, but by my spirit. Hope you can remember that one. God will help us to do it. So, we've given up everything. We make ourselves vulnerable to follow the king because the king loves us and we follow him to the Father. Thanks very much, Simeon.